You see, Hastings, I was right. Always I knew there was something lacking, some piece of the puzzle that was not there.
Do you mean that this Michael Seaton business has some bearing on the case?
Oh, ma foi, do you not see? It gives us what we have been looking for, the motive.
I may be very dense, but I can't see it.
Now, just over a week ago, Sir Matthew Seaton dies. He was a millionaire, one of the richest men in England.
Yes, but...
One step at a time. He has a nephew whom he idolizes and to whom we may safely assume he has left his vast fortune. Last Tuesday, Michael Seaton was reported missing, and the following day the attacks began on Mademoiselle Nick's life.
But I still...
Supposing, Hastings, that Michael Seaton made a will before he started on his flight and left everything to his fiancée.
That's pure speculation.
Perhaps, but it must be so. Because if it is not, there is no meaning in anything that has happened. Oh, it is no dilapidated house that is at stake, but an enormous fortune.
But if nobody knew of the engagement...
Somebody did know. Somebody always knows. If they do not know, they guess. Madame Rice suspected. Mademoiselle Nick admitted so much. And she may have had a way of turning her suspicion into a certainty.
How could she do that?
Well, for one thing, there must have been letters from Michael Seaton to Mademoiselle Nick. And it is all too evident that she leaves things here, there, and everywhere.
And Frederica Rice probably knew about the terms of her friend's will.
Doubtless. So this narrows down our list of suspects. I dismiss Commander Challenger. I dismiss Mr. Lazarus. I dismiss the excessively Australian Mr. and Mrs. Croft. So, only two people remain.
One is obviously Frederica Rice.
Yes. She is indicated very clearly. Apart from End House itself, which was left to Nick's cousin, Mr. Weiss, everything was to go to her. If Mademoiselle Nick had been shot instead of Maggie, Mrs. Rice would be a very rich woman.
I can hardly believe it.
You mean that you can hardly believe that a beautiful woman can be a murderess? Then what about our other suspect, Charles Weiss?
But he only stands to inherit the house.
Yes, my friend, but he may not know that. Did he make Mademoiselle's will for her? No, I think not. He may well believe that his scatterbrained cousin never made a will at all, and that he will inherit as next of kin.
You know, that really seems much more probable.
Yes, that is your romantic mind, Hastings, that well-known figure of fiction, the wicked solicitor. But it is true that Mr. Weiss would be more likely to know about the pistol and more likely to use it.
And to send that boulder crashing down.
Perhaps.
It really is amazing the way Nick has escaped.
Yes, and I can take no credit to myself.
Providence?
Mon ami, you say that in your Sunday morning voice of gratitude, without reflecting that what you are really saying is that le bon Dieu has killed Maggie Buckley.
Really, Poitou?
But I will not sit back and say le bon Dieu has arranged everything. I will not interfere, because I am convinced that le bon Dieu created Hercule Poirot for the express purpose of interfering. It is my métier.
The French windows of End House were, as usual, wide open. Poirot rang the bell to summon Ellen, who showed not the least surprise on seeing us.
Search where you like. The police have been all over the garden since early this morning. I don't know whether they found anything.
Were you very surprised last night when you heard that Miss Buckley had been shot?
Yes, sir. Very surprised. I can't imagine anyone being so wicked as to want to arm Miss Maggie.
If it had been anyone else, you would not have been so surprised, hmm?
I don't know what you mean, sir.
When I came into the hall last night, you asked if anyone had been hurt. Were you expecting something of the kind?
You wouldn't understand, sir. You see, this isn't a good house.
But you mean that sometimes in an old house there is an atmosphere of evil?
That's it, sir. Bad thoughts and bad deeds to it. It's like dry rot. You can't get rid of it. I always knew something bad would happen here one day.
In an old house, there are sometimes secret hiding places. Do you know of any here?
Well, sir, there is a kind of sliding panel thing in this very room.
Huh?
I remember being shown it as a girl. Only, no, I can't recall where it is.
Big enough for a person to hide in?
Oh, no, sir, no. It's just a little cupboard place, about a foot square. No more than that.
Ah, well, thank you, Ellen. We shall not need to detain you any longer. We will begin our search in the library.
What was all that about?
The secret chamber. I thought it might have appealed to you, Hastings. And I wish to rid myself of the possibility of the unknown intruder. Factor X, let us call it. But it is of no consequence. Let us see if the will is among the papers in Mademoiselle's desk.
It took us some time to go through them. Everything was in complete confusion. Bills, receipts, invitations, all jumbled up together.
But no sign of a will. The only item of interest is perhaps this letter.
Darling, party was too marvellous. Feel rather a worm today. You were wise not to touch that stuff. It's too hard to give up. I'm writing to the boyfriend to hurry up the supply. What hell life is. Yours, Freddy. This must be from Mrs. Rice.
Dated last February. She takes drugs, of course. I knew that as soon as I looked at her.
Really?
You can see it in her eyes. And then there are her extraordinary variations of mood.
Well, that must have been what Nick meant when she said Mrs. Rice was not always herself.
Undoubtedly. Ah, well, we have drawn a blank here. Let us try Mademoiselle's room.
Surely, Poirot, those are underclothes. I mean, we can hardly...
Decidedly, my poor Hastings, you belong to the Victorian era. Young ladies are not ashamed of their underclothes nowadays.
I don't see any need to search through those things.
Écoutez, mon ami. Clearly she does not lock up her treasures. If she were to hide anything from sight, it would be underneath the stockings and the petticoats. Here are... And here, if I do not mistake, are the love letters of Michael Seaton.
No, Poirot, you really can't do that. It isn't playing the game.
I am not playing a game, my friend. I am hunting down a murderer. Now come, you might as well read them with me. Console yourself with the thought that the faithful Ellen probably knows them by heart.
New Year's Day. Darling... The new year is in, and I'm making good resolutions. It seems too wonderful that you should actually...
February 8th. Dearest love, how I wish I could see you more often. But honestly, it might upset the whole apple cart. Uncle Matthew has got such a bee in his bonnet about...
April 18th. Marriages. Darling, the whole thing is fixed up. If I pull this off, I shall be able to take a firm line with Uncle Matthew. And if he doesn't like it, what do
Dearest,
I care?
I'm off tomorrow. Somebody said I ought to make a will, so I have, on a half sheet of paper, and sent it to old Whitfield. I remembered that your name was really Magdala, which was clever of me, so that's it. I've simply written, I leave everything to Magdala. So, Hastings, it is as I told you. We now know that the fact that Michael Seaton made a will in favour of Mademoiselle Nick is actually recorded in writing, and with the letter so casually hidden, anyone could read them.
Ellen?
Almost certainly. Or Frederica Rice. Or even Mr. Vice.
Or Ellen could be in league with one of them. Lazarus, perhaps.
It is possible, my friend. With the fortune of one of the richest men in England at stake, who might not find the temptation impossible to resist? But which of them fired the shots that killed that poor girl, Hastings? Which of them?
Back again already, Monsieur Poirot? I hardly expected to see you so soon.
Yes, mademoiselle, I am like the Jack in the case, always popping up again. This will of yours. Hastings and I, we have searched all over End House, but we find it not. Think, try to remember when you saw it last.
The trouble is that I never have particular places for things. I probably shoved it away in some drawer or other.
You did not put it in the secret panel by any chance.
The secret what?
Your housekeeper, Ellen, says there's a secret panel in the drawing room.
Oh, I've never heard of such a thing. I suppose Grandfather must have known about it, but if he did, he never told me. Are you sure Ellen isn't making it all up?
No, Mademoiselle, I am not at all sure. Oh, but we are wandering from the subject. Your will, the last will and testament of Magdala Buckley.
I put that in, last will and testament, and said pay all debts and testamentary expenses. I remembered that out of a book I'd read.
You did not use a will form, then?
Well, there wasn't time for that. I was just going in for my appendix op. Mr. Croft said will forms could be very misleading.
Mr. Croft? The fellow who lives in your lodge?
Yes. It was he who asked me if I'd made one. I'd never have thought of it myself.
Very helpful, the excellent Mr. Croft.
He got Ellen in to witness it. Oh, of course. Oh, what an idiot I've been, letting you hunt round End House. Charles has got it. My cousin, Charles Vice.
Ah, so that is the explanation.
Mr. Croft said a lawyer was the proper person to have charge of it. So we sent it to Charles. I should have remembered. He sent me those carnations.
They're very pretty.
And the roses are from George, and the lilies are from Freddie. Hmm. Oh, and look here. Grapes. Don't they look scrumptious?
Oh, you have not eaten any of them?
No, not yet.
You must eat nothing that comes from outside. Nothing, you comprehend?
You really think they might try again?
No, do not think of it. You are safe here. But remember, eat nothing that does not come from the nursing home. And now, Mademoiselle, if you would be so good as to write a note to Charles Vice, authorizing him to show us your will. We have just time to catch him while he is still in his office.
I beg your pardon, but I really am at a loss to understand.
Has Mademoiselle Buckley not made her instructions clear?
But my dear sir, no will has been entrusted to my keeping.
Come on.
Well, as far as I know, my cousin never made a will. She certainly never consulted me.
But she wrote it herself, you understand?
On a sheet of notepaper. She posted it to you.
In that case, all I can say is that I never received it.
Oh, then there is nothing more to be said. There must be some mistake.
Certainly there must. I never received anything of the kind.
Is he lying, do you think?
Impossible to tell. One thing is clear. He will not budge from the position he has taken up.
So, what do we do now?
We go to see the Crofts, to see if they remember what happened. It seems to have been very much their doing.
Of course I remember. It was when she went in for her appendix operation.
It probably wasn't appendicitis at all. These doctors, they're always cutting you up if they can. It wasn't the kind you have to operate on. She'd had a digestion and one thing and another, and they'd x-rayed her and they said out it had better come.
Well, I asked her if she'd made a will. Well, more as a joke than anything else.
She wrote it out there and then.
And what was done with it?
I posted it off to Vice myself in the box by the gate.
Mr. Vice says he never received it.
You mean it got lost in the post? But that's impossible, surely.
Anyway, you are certain that you posted it?
Certain, sure. I'll take my oath on it any day.
So which of them is telling the truth? Croft or Vice?
I don't see what Croft would gain by lying. The will's got nothing to do with him. And his statement tallies exactly with what Nick said.
You are right. But all the same, I am glad that Monsieur Croft was doing the cooking when we arrived. He left an excellent impression of a greasy thumb and first finger on a corner of the newspaper that covered the kitchen table. I managed to tear it off unseen by him. We will send it to the good Inspector Japp at Scotland Yard. I cannot help feeling that our genial Monsieur Croft is too good to be genuine.
That afternoon, the police sent round to us a very curious piece of evidence which they had turned up while searching the garden of End House, a torn scrap of paper.
Must have money at once. If not, you know what will happen.
Do they say whether there were any fingerprints on it?
There were none. Of course, it may have nothing to do with the case. Does the writing look at all familiar to you?
Oh, that reminds me of something. That note from Mrs. Rice that we found in Nick's desk.
Yes, there are resemblances. Yet I do not think it is the handwriting of Mrs. Rice. Come in.
Oh, Commander Challenger.
Just looked in to find out if you were any further forward.
Ah, parbleu, at this moment I am feeling that I am considerably farther back. I seem to progress en reculant.
One step forward and two steps back, eh? I've been hearing all about you, Monsieur Poirot. You'll get to the bottom of it, all right.
That I swear to you. I am the dog that stays on the scent and does not leave it.
Got any ideas?
I have suspicions of two people.
I suppose I mustn't ask who they are.
I should not tell you. I might probably be in the error. But tell me, Commander, you would like, I think, to marry Mademoiselle Nick.
I've always wanted to marry her.
But Mademoiselle was engaged to another man, and she has died the death of a hero.
So it's true. Nick was engaged to Michael Seaton. I heard a rumor this morning.
You never suspected it before?
I knew she was engaged to someone. She told me so 2 days ago. But she didn't give me a clue as to who it was.
Entre nous, Michael Seaton has left her, I fancy, a very pretty fortune. She weeps for her lover now. But the heart consoles itself.
So that's where you've got to, George. They told me I might find you here.
Good afternoon, madame.
Good afternoon, Mrs. Rice.
Good afternoon. I'm sorry to intrude. I merely wanted to ask George whether he'd got my watch back.
I called for it this morning. Here you are.
It was a watch of rather unusual shape, round like a globe, set on a strap of plain black moire. I remember that I'd seen a similar one on Nick Buckley's wrist.
I hope it'll keep better time now.
It's rather a bore. Something's always going wrong with it. Am I interrupting a conference?
No, indeed, madame. We were only talking gossip. How quickly the news has spread that Mademoiselle Nick was engaged to that brave airman who perished.
So Nick was engaged to Michael Seaton.
Does it surprise you, madame?
A little. I don't know why. He was certainly very taken with her last autumn. They went about a lot together. And then after Christmas, they both seemed to cool off, rather. As far as I know, they hardly met.
They kept their secret well.
On account of old Sir Matthew, I suppose. He really was a little off his head.
You had no suspicion, madame? And yet she was such an intimate friend.
Nick can be a close little devil when she likes. But I understand now why she's been so nervy lately. And I ought to have guessed from something she said the other day.
Your little friend is very attractive, madame.
Jim Lazarus certainly seemed to think so at one time.
Oh, everyone falls in love with Nick at some time or other. Oh, my God.
What? You're not well, madame?
No, I'm all right.
What?
George, darling, don't look so worried. Let's talk about something exciting. I want to know if Monsieur Poirot is on the track.
It is early to say, madame.
Yes, I suppose that's... I'm sorry, I've got ahead. I'll go and lie down. Perhaps tomorrow they'll let me see Nick.
You never know what that woman's up to. Nick may be fond of her, but I don't believe she's fond of Nick. But there, you can't tell with women. It's darling, darling, darling all the time, when damn you would probably be closer to the truth.
Challenger was in an expansive mood and insisted on accompanying us down to the flower shop in St. Lou, where Poirot was endlessly indecisive about what he should send to Nick. Eventually, he settled for orange carnations in a gold basket tied with a large blue bow, accompanied by a card on which he wrote with an ornate flourish...
With the compliment of Hercule Poirot.
On the following day, the inquest on the death of Maggie Buckley took place in the old courthouse. Her father, who had come down from the north of England, formally identified the body, and I gave evidence of finding it. Proceedings were adjourned for a week, and Poirot decided we should set off for London.
All is peaceful here. Mademoiselle is safe in her nursing home, and the watchdogs, therefore, can take leave of absence.
Our first port of call was Messrs. Whitfield, Pargeter and Whitfield, solicitors both for Michael Seaton and his uncle Sir Matthew. They confirmed that Seaton had in fact left a will, a scrap of paper but perfectly legal, bequeathing everything to Magdala Buckley.
Making her, as the worthy Mr. Whitfield so bluntly put it, a target for any ambitious fortune hunter. So, that is settled, mon ami. It was as I thought. Now let us join the good Inspector Japp for dinner at the Cheshire Cheese.
I thought you'd given it all up and were growing vegetable marrows in the country, Poirot.
Oh, I tried, Japp, I tried. But even when you grow the vegetable marrows, you cannot get away from murder.
Well, you mustn't be depressed, old cock. Even if you don't see your way clear, well, you can't go about at your time of life and expect to have the success you used to. We all of us get stale as the years go by. Got to give the youngers a chance, you know.
And yet the old dog is the one who knows his tricks. He is cunning. He does not leave the scent.
Oh, I thought we were talking about human beings, not dogs.
Why, is there so much difference?
It depends upon your point of view, or the dogs. You really are a caution, Poirot. You always were. You look just the same. Hair a bit thinner on top, but the face fungus fuller than ever.
Come on, what is that?
Chap is congratulating you on your moustaches.
Oh, they are luxuriant, yes?
Well, anyway, I've attended to that bit of business you asked me to look into. The fingerprints are on the scrap of newspaper you sent me.
Yes?
Nothing doing.
Oh.
Whoever your Mr. Croft may be, he hasn't passed through our hands.
Is he known in Australia?
It doesn't look like it. I wired Melbourne, but they've got nothing on anybody of that name or description.
Uh-huh. It was worth a try, at least. And what about the elegant Mr. Lazarus, the art expert who knows so much about cars?
Firm's got a good reputation. Quite straight and honourable in their dealings. They're in a bad way financially, though.
Why is that?
A slump in the art market, or so they tell me.
Did you ever get a report on that painting, Poirot?
Oh, yes. It is worthless. £20 at most.
Now, how about a bit of stilt in a glass of port?
It's on its way.
Sorry I couldn't come up with anything, Poirot. Barking up the wrong tree, I expect.
Perhaps. Poirot is a good dog, but sometimes he follows the wrong scent. And sometimes, when there is no scent to follow, he noses around, seeking always something that is not very nice.
It's not a nice profession, ours. And yours is worse than mine. Not official, you see. And therefore, a lot more worming yourself into places in underhand ways.
I do not disguise myself, Shap. Never have I disguised myself.
You couldn't. You're unique. Once seen, never forgotten.
Ah, for quiet.
Only my fun, don't mind me. But here's the Stilton and the port.
It turned out to be a very merry evening talking over the good old days. But I could see that Poirot was worried about the case. I had the feeling that for once he was going to fail. We caught the train back to St. Louis the following morning. There was a message waiting for Poirot asking him to telephone the nursing home. Urgently.
Come on. Say it again, I beg. When? Oh, yes, yes, I will come at once.
What is it?
Why did I go away, Hastings? Why did I go away?
Tell me what's happened.
Nick is dangerously ill.
Oh.
Cocaine poisoning. They have got at her after all.
It's been touch and go, but she's going to be all right. The trouble was not knowing how much she'd taken of the damn stuff.
She will live.
Oh, yes, she'll live.
But how did it happen? Who has been allowed in?
Nobody has been allowed in.
But then...
It was a box of chocolates.
But I told her to eat nothing. Nothing that came from outside.
I don't know about that. It's hard work keeping a girl from a box of chocolates. She only ate one, thank goodness.
How was it done?
Quite clumsily. A chocolate cut in half, the cocaine mixed with the filling, and the chocolate stuck together again. An amateur, homemade job.
May I see Mademoiselle?
If you come back in an hour, I think she'll be well enough.
Escape number 5, Monsieur Poirot.
Oh, Mademoiselle.
Your old nursing home hasn't proved so safe after all.
If only you had obeyed orders, Mademoiselle.
But I have.
You were supposed to touch nothing that came from outside.
No more I did.
But these chocolates.
I thought they would be safe. After all, you sent them.
Huh? I never did anything of the kind.
Oh, but you did. Your card was on the box.
What?
It's in the drawer of my bedside table. See for yourself.
Ah, here it is. With the compliments of Hercule Poirot.
You see?
I did not write this.
It looks very like your handwriting, Poirot.
It was so like the card that came with the orange carnations. I never doubted that the chocolates had come from you.
Why should you doubt? Oh, but he has genius, this man. Genius. With the compliment of Hercule Poirot. So simple. I have been tricked. Outwitted as though I were a little schoolboy. But it shall not happen again, I promise you. Come, Hastings.
What was so strange was that Poirot had no difficulty in tracing where the box of chocolates had come from. It had been delivered by Mr. Lazarus. He told us the chocolates were a gift from Mrs. Rice and that she had asked him to take them to the nursing home.
What's all this about Nick being taken ill?
Oh, it is a most mysterious affair, madame. Tell me, did you send her a box of chocolates yesterday?
Yes. She asked me to get them for her.
She asked you to get them?
Yes.
But she was not allowed to see anyone. How did you get in?
Oh, I didn't. She telephoned. She asked me to send her a £2 box of Fuller's chocolates.
How did her voice sound? Weak?
No, on the contrary, it was quite strong. But different somehow. I didn't realise it was she who was speaking at first.
Until she told you who it was?
Yes.
Now, are you sure, madame, that it was your friend?
Well, it must have been. Who else could it be?
That is an interesting question, madame. Now, could you swear that it was your friend's voice?
No, I couldn't. She certainly sounded different. I thought it was the phone or perhaps her being ill.
Would you have recognised the voice if she hadn't told you who it was?
No, I don't think I would. But who could it have been, Monsieur Poirot?
That is what I intend to find out, madame.
What exactly has happened to Nick?
She is ill. Dangerously ill. Those chocolates were poisoned.
The chocolates I sent her? But that's impossible.
Not impossible, madame, since she is at death's door.
Oh, my God. I don't understand. The other, yes, but not that. But they couldn't be poisoned. You're making some dreadful mistake, Monsieur Poirot. It can't have been the chocolates.
I understand nothing, but nothing. I am in the dark. I am a little child. Who stands to gain by Mademoiselle's death? Madame Rice. Who buys the chocolates and admits it? Madame Rice. And Madame Rice takes cocaine. There is no mistaking it. And there was cocaine in those chocolates. What does she know, Madame Rice? She knows something, but I cannot make her speak. Oh, I tell you, Hastings, it is all very dark, very black.
Always darkest before dawn.
Oh, spare me the proverbs, Hastings. Now, if you would be the good friend, the good, helpful friend...
Yes?
Go out, I beg of you, and buy me some playing cards.
I suspected it was simply an excuse to get rid of me. However, I misjudged him. That night, when I came into his sitting room at about 10 o'clock, I found him carefully building a house of cards. It was an old trick of his to calm his nerves.
One needs the precision... One card on another, so, in exactly the right place. And that supports the weight of the next card. And on top of that, I place another... But I have it, Hastings! I have it! Mademoiselle Nick is dead.
What? What's happened?
No. Not really dead, but it can be arranged. Yes, for 24 hours it can be managed with the help of the doctors and nurses and the police, bien entendu.
But what's the point of it?
4 times the murderer has tried and failed. The 5th time he has succeeded. We tell everyone that Mademoiselle Nick is dead, and we wait to see what happens.
The events of the next day are completely hazy in my memory. I was unfortunate enough to wake with a fever. I have been liable to these bouts since I contracted malaria some years ago. I spent most of the time dozing in an armchair with a rug over my knees, so that much of the day takes on in my memory the semblance of a nightmare, with Poirot coming and going as a kind of fantastic clown.
Comment ça va, mon ami?
Oh.
I come this moment from ordering wreaths, immense, stupendous, and large quantities of lilies. Everyone orders something, each more exotic than the last. My little plan, it will make the fortune of the flower shops.
I dozed off for an hour or so, and when I opened my eyes, Poirot was back again. Clearly he was having the time of his life.
I shall not dress for dinner tonight. I am too much the broken old man. I shall eat hardly anything. The food untasted will remain on my plate. But in my room... I will consume some brioche and some chocolate eclairs, which I had the foresight to buy at a confectioner's. And you?
Some more quinine, I think.
Ah, oh, my poor Hastings.
When I next awoke, he was sitting at a table writing.
I am compiling a list of questions concerning each person. They may have no bearing on the crime, but they are things that remain unexplained. Would you like to hear?
Yes, I would. I feel rather better, I think.
Very well. I will read them to you. A. Ellen. Is she speaking the truth about the secret panel? If there is such a thing, why does she not remember where it is? Has she read Michael Seaton's letters? B. Mr. and Mrs. Croft, where do they really come from? Is there some possible connection with the Buckley family? C. Mrs. Rice, does she know that she is Mademoiselle's residuary legatee?
Very likely, I should have thought.
Who is the boyfriend mentioned in her note who supplies her with cocaine? Why did she suddenly turn faint that time in this room? Is she lying about the telephone conversation? What did she mean when she said, I can understand the other, but not this?
Yes, I've been wondering what she meant by that.
D. Monsieur Lazarus. Why did he offer £50 for a picture that is practically worthless?
Perhaps he wanted to do Nick a good turn.
Oh, but he is a dealer. He does not buy to sell at a loss. E. Monsieur Weiss. Why did he say what he did about his cousin's fanatical devotion to End House? Did he in fact receive the will? But why lie about it? F. Commander Challenger. I have no question against his name. Is that in itself suspicious? Which leaves us with X, the unknown. Is it possible that there is some mysterious person we have failed to take into account?
What do we do now?
We wait until the morning, my friend. Tomorrow, if I am not mistaken, certain things will arise.
The following day I awoke feeling weak, but with the fever abated, and with the morning's post came a letter from the parents of Maggie Buckley, whom we had met briefly at the inquest, enclosing a note she had written to them on the day of her arrival at End House, the day of her death.
If you would be so good as to read it to me, Hastings.
It's lovely weather here. Nick seems very well, if a little restless, but I cannot see why she should have telegraphed for me the way she did. Tuesday would have done just as well. No more now. We are going to have tea with some neighbours, Australians who have rented the lodge. Nick says they are kind, but rather awful. We'll write tomorrow.
The voice of the dead. And he tells us nothing.
Poirot positively rushed to the phone. Although his own contributions to the conversation were entirely non-committal, when he returned, his eyes were sparkling with excitement.
That was Monsieur Charles Weiss. Huh? Mademoiselle Nick's will, signed on the 25th of February, arrived at his office this morning.
Oh, do you think he's speaking the truth?
Well, you mean, has he had the will all along? It's certainly very curious. But I told you that if Mademoiselle was supposed to be dead, we should have the developments, and here they are.
Extraordinary. I suppose this is the will naming Frederica Rice the residuary legatee.
Monsieur Weiss said nothing about the contents, but there is very little reason to doubt that this is the same will.
So, we are back to our principal suspect.
Frederica Rice.
Or Freddy, as her friends insist on calling her.
Now, why disfigure such a pretty name? Freddy, ce n'est pas joli.
Well, there aren't many abbreviations of Frederica. It's not a name like Margaret where you can have half a dozen.
What was it I was trying to think about when the phone rang? Something about the letter written by that poor murdered girl that struck me as curious. Let me look at it again.
He read it over to himself several times while I watched the boats racing across the bay.
Oh, but I have been blind, blind.
But what on earth's the matter?
So simple, and I could not see it. Oh, how could I be such a miserable imbecile?
Well, what is it? What couldn't you see?
Wait, do not speak. But yes, it all fits in. All the things that have puzzled me, they all have their place.
You mean you know everything?
Nearly everything, all that matters. I shall send a telegram asking two questions. But the answers I already know. They are here, in the little grey cells.
But what happens when you receive the answers?
Do you remember that Mademoiselle Nick said she wanted to stage a play at End House?
Hmm.
Tonight, we shall stage such a play. But it will be a play directed by Hercule Poirot, and there will be a ghost in it, for Mademoiselle Nick will have a part to play.
But what's it all about? What
No, I will say no more. Tonight my little comedy will reveal the truth. It will be a play such as no one has ever seen. All our suspects shall be assembled at End House, and the murderer will be revealed.
It was a curious gathering that met that evening at End House. Everyone on the list of Poirot's suspects was seated round the table in the dining room, except for Ellen the housekeeper, who sat by the door. Frederica Rice wore a black dress, and Mr. Lazarus sat beside her, with George Challenger and Mr. Croft on the other side. Mrs. Croft was next to me in an invalid chair.
This is a surprise, isn't it? Makes a change for me, I must say. I think I shall try and get out more. Mr. Vyse made a particular point of my coming.
Mr. Vyse?
This is a rather unconventional gathering tonight, but then the circumstances are most unusual. In an ordinary situation, the will of the deceased is read after the funeral, but in deference to Monsieur Poirot's special wish, I am proposing to read it now. That is why you've all been asked to come here. The will has come into my possession in a rather strange manner. Although dated last February, it only reached me by post this morning. However, it is undoubtedly in the handwriting of my late cousin, and though a most informal document, it is properly attested. The will is quite short. This is the last will and testament of Magdala Buckley. I direct that all my funeral expenses should be paid, and I appoint my cousin, Charles Vyse, as my executor. I leave everything of which I die possessed to Mildred Croft, in grateful recognition of the services rendered by her to my father, Philip Buckley, which services nothing can ever repay. Signed, Magdala Buckley.
It's quite true. Philip Buckley was out all alone in Australia, and if it hadn't been for me... Well, I'm not going to go into that. A secret it has been, and a secret it had better remain. Nick knew all about it. Her father told her. We came down here because I'd always been curious about this End House Philip talked so much about. And that dear girl couldn't do enough for us. She wanted us to come and live with her, but we wouldn't do that. So she insisted that we should have the lodge, and not a penny's rent would she take.
Had you any knowledge of this, Monsieur Vyse?
None. I knew Philip Buckley had been in Australia, but I had never heard rumours of an attachment of any kind there.
And you won't get a word out of me about it. The secret goes to the grave with me.
Well, Mother, this is a surprise. Nick never told me what she was up to.
Dear, sweet girl. I only wish she could look down and see us now.
Well, perhaps she does. Who knows?
Perhaps she does. And since we are all seated here around this table, why do we not hold a séance?
A séance? Wouldn't that be rather...
It will be most interesting. My friend Hastings has the most remarkable mediumistic powers. I feel that the conditions are propitious. Do you not agree, Hastings?
Oh, yes, very, very propitious.
If you would be so good as to turn off the lights, Ellen.
Yes, sir.
Now, if you would all put your hands on the table so that each hand touches that of his neighbour. Yes. Yes, he is already in a trance. Now concentrate, all of you. Concentrate on Mademoiselle Nick.
Oh, she is already on the threshold. She is here.
She's come back from the grave.
And now we will switch on the lights.
Nick, you're real.
Yes, Freddie, I'm real. Thank you so much for all you did for my father, Mrs. Croft. But I'm afraid you won't be able to enjoy the benefits of that will just yet.
Oh, my God, take me away, Bert. Take me away quickly. It was all a joke, my dear. That was what it was. Just a joke.
Curious sort of joke.
Well, well, if it isn't my old friend Millie Merton.
Inspector Jack.
Hand up your old tricks again, I see.
No, it was just a joke.
Well, that's all it was, really.
Whoever is forger you've ever run across, Millie Merton. A real artist.
You mean the will was a forgery?
Of course it was a forgery, Charles. I left the house to you and everything else to Freddie.
To me?
There's someone at the window.
Oh!
Oh! Hey.
Oh! Quick, he's out there.
Leave him to me.
Are you badly hurt, Freddie?
No, the bullet grazed my shoulder, that was all. It isn't even bleeding.
Oh.
Give me a hand, will you, Hastings? The poor devil shot himself.
Oh. Here, come on, ease him into the chair. Oh.
Freddie, I didn't really mean it. I didn't. Freddie.
Oh. Is he?
Yes, madame, I fear he's dead.
He was my husband.
The unknown factor X?
Yes, I always felt that there was an X.
I'll get you a brandy, Freddie.
It's on that table behind you, Jimmy.
Yeah.
Yes, I could do with one. I might as well tell you everything, Monsieur Poirot. He was a hopeless drug addict. It was he who taught me how to take cocaine. I could never escape from him. He used to turn up and demand money. It was really blackmail, I suppose. If I didn't give him the money, he threatened to shoot himself. Then he took to threatening to shoot me.
Here you are, Freddie.
Thank you, Jimmy. I suppose it was he who shot Maggie Buckley. He probably thought it was me. I ought to have told you, Monsieur Poirot, but I couldn't be sure. And then, a few days later, when I saw...
You saw the scrap of his blackmailing letter on my table.
And I knew that it was only a matter of time.
My dear.
I'm all right now, Jimmy. What had we better do?
Don't look at me, madam. I'm merely obliging an old friend. That's all I'm doing.
Mr. Poirot, can't we just hush it all up?
You wish that, mademoiselle.
Well, I'm the person most concerned. There will be no more attacks on me now.
No, that is true. There will be no more attacks on you.
And nothing can ever bring poor Maggie back to life again. Well, if you make all this known to the outside world, you'll only bring an awful lot of publicity and suffering on Freddie. And she hasn't deserved it.
So you want to hush it up, mademoiselle. And what about you, Hastings?
I agree.
Mr. Lazarus?
Yes, hush it up.
Commander Challenger?
Best thing to do.
Let's forget everything that's passed in this room tonight.
I don't think anyone was asking you, Mr. Merton, nor Millie here.
Ellen?
I won't say a word, sir. Please, that's all this mandate.
And you, Mr. Vice.
You just can't hush up a thing like this.
Charles, think of poor Freddie.
I'm sorry, my dear, but the facts have to be communicated to the proper quarter.
5-1. And the good Jap is neutral.
I'm on holiday.
So, only Monsieur Weiss declares himself on the side of law and order. You're a man of character.
The position is clear. There is only one course possible.
And I too range myself on the side of the minority. I too am for the truth.
But Mr. Poirot...
Mademoiselle, you dragged me into this case. You cannot silence me. Now, sit down, all of you. And I will tell you the truth. I have here a list of persons I believed connected with the crime. I numbered them with the letters of the alphabet, A to F, and then I added the letter X for a person unknown. I did not know who X was until tonight, but I suspected that there was such a person, and I was right. But a day ago, I suddenly realized that I must add another letter to my list. Let us call it Y.
Another person unknown?
Not exactly. It stands for a person who should have been included in the original list, but who was overlooked. Reassure yourself, Madame Rice. It was not your husband who shot Maggie Buckley. It was the person designated as Y.
Then who is why?
Chief Inspector.
Acting on information received, I took up a position in the house earlier this evening, having been secretly introduced into the place by Mr. Poirot. On his advice, I concealed myself behind the curtains in the drawing room. When everyone was assembled in the dining room to hear Mr. Vice read out the will, a young lady entered the drawing room and switched on the light. She made her way to the fireplace and opened a small recess in the panelling.
The secret hiding place.
She took from the recess a pistol. With this in her hand, she left the room and made her way to the hall where the visitors had left their coats on arrival. She carefully wiped the pistol with her handkerchief and placed it in the pocket of her grey coat, the property of Mrs. Rice.
It's a lie. Every word of it.
Voila. It is Mademoiselle Nick who is the person Y. And it was Mademoiselle Nick who shot Maggie Buckley.
You've gone mad. Why on earth would I want to kill Maggie?
In order to inherit the fortune left to her by Michael Seaton. For her name, too, was Magdala Buckley, and it was to her that he was engaged, not you.
But that's nonsense. You can't possibly prove it.
You telephoned to the police, Chief Inspector Shap?
Yes, that should be them arriving now. They've got the warrant.
You've all gone stark, staring mad.
If you would kindly come with me, Miss Buckley.
Doesn't look as if you're giving me much option. Freddie, give me your wristwatch. As a souvenir, will you?
My wristwatch? Yes, here you are.
Thanks. And now, since you're so convinced that I'm a murderess, Mr. Poirot, and since the Chief Inspector has a police van waiting outside, I suppose we must go through with this ridiculous comedy.
A comedy that you yourself devised, Mademoiselle. But you should not have given the star part to Hercule Poirot. That, Mademoiselle, was your grave mistake. And now, the comedy. It is finished.
The Crofts, too, were taken away, escorted by Jap. The rest of us, Frederica, Lazarus, Challenger, Vice, and myself, moved into the drawing room. Poirot looked round at us with a gratified smile and that air of mock humility that I knew so well.
Eh bien, mes amis, I was fooled. Completely and absolutely. I confess it. The little Nick, she had me where she wanted me, as your idiom so well expresses it. Ah, Madame Rice, when you told Hastings that your friend was a clever little liar, how right you were. Her stories were invented, very cleverly, to arouse the interest of Hercule Poirot.
But why?
To give the impression that Mademoiselle Nick's life was in danger. At the start of this whole affair, we have this young girl, Nick Buckley, beautiful, unscrupulous, and fanatically devoted to Endhouse.
As I told you at our first meeting.
And I, very foolishly, I admit, did not believe you. But Endhouse was mortgaged. It was falling to pieces, and she had no money to do anything about it. And then she meets the young aviator, Michael Seaton, and he is immediately attracted to her.
He certainly was.
She knows that in all probability he is his uncle's heir, and that Sir Matthew Seaton is worth millions. But Michael Seaton is not really in love with her. He thinks her good fun, that is all. They meet at Scarborough. He takes her up in his flying machine. And then the catastrophe occurs.
One day she brought Maggie along with her.
And he falls in love with her at first sight. Nick is dumbfounded. But to young Seaton, Maggie was different. The only girl in the world for him. They became secretly engaged. And only one person was permitted to know.
And that was Nick.
She gets to know that Michael Seaton proposes to leave everything to Maggie Buckley. She pays little attention to it at the time.
And then she heard of Sir Matthew's death.
And immediately after that, Michael Seaton's plane goes missing.
Straight away, an outrageous plan comes into our young lady's mind. Seaton only knows her as Nick. He does not know that she, too, is named Magdala. His will is very short and informal. He leaves everything to Magdala. And in the eyes of the world, Michael Seaton is Nick's friend. If she were to claim to be engaged to him, no one would be surprised. But if her plan is to succeed, Maggie must be eliminated. Time is short. She arranges for Maggie to come and stay in a few days' time. But then a major new factor comes into play. She reads in the local paper that I am staying at the Majestic Hotel.
You mean she really knew who you were?
Of course she knew, Hastings. Oh. Everyone has heard of Hercule Poirot. I believe in the peril that menaces her, and I play into her hands by asking her to send for a friend. She seizes her chance. She does not reveal that Maggie has already been invited. She asked her to come a day earlier than has been arranged.
So that she would be at End House with a fireworks party.
Where nobody would notice the sound of a gun going off.
Exactly. And how easy the crime is to arrange. On the night of the party, Nick is wearing black. Fool that I was, I concluded that she was in mourning, but it was because she had to be dressed exactly like Maggie. When everyone is outside watching the fireworks, Maggie begins to feel cold.
Yes, it did get awfully chilly.
The two women go back into the house, but Maggie cannot find her coat because Nick has hidden it, and it is easy to persuade her to wear the crimson shawl. As Maggie leaves the house, Nick steals out after her and shoots her, and then goes back inside to hide the pistol in the secret panel and waits until she hears the sound of voices outside.
I'm sorry I've been so long, Maggie. I couldn't find my... What is it? What's happened? Maggie! Oh, Maggie!
How well she played her part. Magnificently. Oh, yes, she staged a fine drama there. Ellen said that this was an evil house, and I fear that she is right. It was this house which drove Mademoiselle Nick to take her cousin's life.
But the poisoned chocolates, were they the ones I sent her?
It was all part of the comedy. If Nick's life was attempted again after Maggie's death, everyone would be more convinced than ever that the shooting was a mistake.
So once we were out of the way, she simply rang you up, Mrs. Rice, and asked you to send her a box of chocolates.
And when it arrived, she fills certain chocolates with cocaine.
You mean to say that she actually had cocaine with her?
Madame Rice?
Oh, yes, she had cocaine.
She eats just one of the chocolates. She knows very well how much cocaine to take and just what symptoms to exaggerate.
But what about the card from you?
Ah, Savristi, she has a nerve. It was my card, the one I sent with the basket of carnations.
Ah.
So simple, and I fell for it.
Why did she put the pistol in my coat?
Oh, madame, had it never entered your head that Nick no longer liked you? Did you never feel that she might, in fact, hate you?
It's hard to say. We lived such an insincere life. She was fond of me, once.
Monsieur Lazarus, tell me frankly, was there anything between Mademoiselle Nick and you?
Nothing very serious. I was certainly attracted to her at one time, and then, I don't know why, I went off her.
Yes, that was her tragedy. She attracted people at first, and then, as you say, Mr. Lazarus, they went off her. And you fell in love with her closest friend. She began to hate Madame Rice. Madame who had your love and, as she believed, your wealth.
But in that case, why did she leave everything to me?
Ah, but that was last winter, when she was still fond of you, and when she had practically nothing to leave. But she remembered that will. She did not know that the Crofts had suppressed it, and she knew that with the death of Michael Seaton, it would appear to the world that you had a strong motive for doing away with her. That was why she made it seem that you had poisoned the chocolates. Tonight, the will would have been read, naming, as she believed, you as the inheritor of the Seaton millions, and then the pistol would have been found in your coat. The pistol with which Maggie had been shot.
She must have hated me.
Yes, madame. You had what she had not. The ability to win love and to keep it.
I may be very stupid, but I simply can't make head nor tail of this will business. How did the Crofts, or whatever their name really is, come into it?
Ah, that is a different operation entirely. The Crofts persuade madame to make a will and leave it with them to post, but they do not send it. They make another in its place. Then, if anything happens to Nick, the appendix operation goes wrong perhaps, they will produce the document that Millie Merton has so cleverly forged, in which everything is left to her. They had no idea that End House was so heavily mortgaged. They calculated on inheriting a valuable property.
But Nick sailed through the appendix operation without any trouble.
And so they wait. But then came the supposed attacks on Mademoiselle's life. Their hopes begin to rise again. When I announced that Nick was dead, they posted the forged will off to Mr. Weiss. By then, they knew all about the Seton inheritance, and they thought that their plan had succeeded beyond their wildest dreams.
Hmm. What I really want to know, Monsieur Poirot, is how did you first come to suspect Nick?
Oh, I am ashamed that it took me so long. It was when Maggie Buckley's parents sent me the letter that she had written to them on the day of her death. It contained one phrase that puzzled me.
You mean about why Nick had telegrammed her to come on Monday when she was arriving on Tuesday anyway?
Bravo, Hastings! That is exactly it. So Mademoiselle had lied to me. Or at least she had suppressed the truth. And if she could lie about that, some of the other things that she had told me might not be true also. But still it did not make sense. Why should she want Maggie Buckley killed? And then I suddenly recalled some trivial remarks that you were making a few minutes before, my friend, about abbreviations for Margaret. And it suddenly occurred to me to wonder, what was Maggie Buckley's real name?
You wondered whether it might have been Magdala.
It was an old family name. Mademoiselle had told me that. Now, what if Maggie were the Magdala Buckley to whom Michael Seton had left everything? In my mind, I ran over the letters of his that Hastings and I had read. There was a mention of Scarborough.
Maggie was with Nick at Scarborough. That's where she met Seton.
And it explained something that had worried me. Why were there so few letters? And why only those? And then it occurred to me. Nowhere in them was there any mention of a name.
Well, that's true. They all began, darling, or dearest love.
And there was something else, something I ought to have seen at once. Nowhere in any of those letters was there any mention of the appendix operation that Nick Buckley had undergone 6 months ago. No concern, no wishes for recovery. That should have told me that the letters were written to a different person altogether.
But what made you so convinced that Nick had hidden the pistol behind the secret panel?
Because Nick had so positively denied all knowledge of the panel's existence. Mm. She said that Ellen must be making it up. But why should Ellen do a thing like that? Again, I realized that Nick had been lying, which is why I persuaded my good friend Jupp to hide behind the curtain and observe Nick take the pistol from its hiding place and put it in your pocket, madame.
All the same, I don't regret giving her my watch.
No, madame. And nor do I.
You know about that, too.
It's going to be a very unpleasant business. I must see about some form of defence for her, I suppose.
There will be no need of that, I think. That is where you concealed the stuff, is it not, Commander?
Huh?
In those wristwatches?
I haven't the faintest idea what you're talking
about. Do not try to deceive me with your bluff, hearty, good sailor manner. It may deceive Hastings, but it does not deceive me.
Huh?
You make a good thing out of the traffic in drugs, do you not? You are the useful boyfriend mentioned by Madame Rice in her letter to Nick. I advise you, if you do not want the facts put into the hands of the police, to leave at once.
Yes. You're right. I'd quite forgotten. I have an appointment to keep in Plymouth.
Did I not tell you, Hastings? Your instincts are always wrong.
You mean the cocaine was in the wristwatches?
Yes. That was why Mademoiselle had it with her so conveniently in the nursing home. And having put all her supply in the chocolates, she asked Madame Rice for her watch, which was full. But tonight she needed it for a different purpose. It will be a full dose this time.
Full dose?
It is the best way. Better than the hangman's rope. But we must not say so before Mr. Weiss, who is all for law and order. The contents of the watch, it is the merest guess on my part.
Your guesses are always right, Monsieur Poirot.
I've heard nothing. I shall go before I make myself a fellow conspirator. Good night, Monsieur Poirot. All I can say is that it has been a most remarkable experience.
Good night, Monsieur Weiss.
Good night, Mr. Weiss.
And so, Madame Weiss, Monsieur Lazarus, you intend to get married?
As soon as we can.
And I shan't need my wristwatch anymore.
I hope you will have great happiness, madame. You have suffered much, but despite everything, you still have the quality of mercy in your heart.
We must be going. It's late.
We have spent a strange night in an evil house. But of all my questions, there is one that is still unanswered. The picture of old Nick's grandfather, over the fireplace. She told me that you once offered £50 for it. It would give me great pleasure to know why you did that.
As you know, Monsieur Poirot, I am a dealer. That picture is worth not a penny more than £20. I knew that if I offered Nick 50, she would immediately suspect it was worth more and get it valued elsewhere. Then she would find that I had offered her more than it was worth. The next time I tried to buy a picture from her, she would not bother to get that one valued.
And so?
She did not know that the picture on the far wall is by Gainsborough.
As you say, monsieur, you are a dealer. Well, it is time for all of us to take our leave. I trust I shall never have to enter this house again, even though it has witnessed another of my little triumphs. And I shall think carefully before I announce again that I have solved my last case.
No more tempting the gods, Poirot?
Precisely, my friend. This is not the time to go back to the vegetable marrows. Who knows when the next bullet will come rolling towards my feet.
In Agatha Christie's Peril at End House, Hercule Poirot was played by John Moffat and Captain Hastings by Simon Williams. Chief Inspector Japp, Brian Pringle. Nick Buckley, Gemma Saunders. Frederica Rice, Susanna Hamilton. Mr. Croft, Terence Edmund. Mrs. Croft, Richenda Carey. Charles Weiss, Stephen Critchlow, Jimmy Lazarus, Sean Arnold, George Challenger, Andrew Wincott. Maggie Buckley, Elizabeth Convoy, Ellen the housekeeper, Hilda Schroeder, the doctor, Mark Holloway, the police inspector, David Thorpe. Peril at End House was dramatized by Michael Bakewell. It was directed by Enid Williams for BBC Radio 4. And is published in the UK by BBC Worldwide.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.